Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. When I spoke here a few weeks ago, I was talking about preparing for dying. And one of the things that I mentioned that's an important part of that preparation is to finish off business, particularly the business of relationships, and particularly forgiving old hurts, letting go of pain, trying to find some kind of peace with the people that we've been sharing our lives with. This is something that we need to do in preparation for dying, but we also need to do it in order to live happily, to keep on living happily. And so tonight I'd like to talk about forgiveness in the context of finishing off business so we can live more at peace with ourselves and with the people with whom we share this life. Forgiveness is defined as ceasing to feel anger or resentment towards those who've hurt or harmed us. And if we reflect on the definition of forgiveness, we see that the forgiveness is coming from our side. The ceasing to feel anger or resentment is what we're doing, not what the other person is doing, not the person who we're angry with. Another shade of meaning for forgiveness is to let off a debtor. And again, if we reflect, the debtor is still the debtor. We're letting them off. The movement in the mind or the movement in the heart in forgiveness comes from our side and is not dependent on a change in the part of the other person. So this is the first thing to reflect on with forgiveness. It's the work we do in our own heart. And we do it out of loving kindness and compassion for ourselves, first of all, not out of loving kindness and compassion for the person whom we're forgiving. That's part of it. But the loving kindness and compassion for ourselves is based on the wisdom that to hang on to old hurts, to old wounds, is actually harmful for ourselves, first of all. If we think of it like a physical injury that we've received, when we have a wound, that wound has to be tended, it has to be treated. And then if there's damage, there has to be rehabilitation. There has to be some work done so that that damaged part of the body can again function in the way that it did previously. And if we don't get the appropriate treatment, and if we ignore the wound that we've got and we don't help that part of the body to recover, then it becomes useless, or at best it becomes less than it was before. And this is what happens to us emotionally when we don't resolve old hurts, when we carry wounds with us throughout our life and we don't address them. The one who suffers first of all is we ourselves. Because that old wound we carry with us into the present, into our relations now. And it colours how we relate to the world. We relate to the world in one way before the wound, and then we relate to the world carrying that wound through the filter of that wound. And so doing the work of forgiveness is helping us to heal our own wounds so we can move on. And some of the wounds that we have to heal are wounds that people have inflicted on us. But sometimes we've inflicted wounds on ourselves. And we have to learn to forgive ourselves, just as we have to learn to forgive others. And sometimes we've harmed others. And so the forgiveness that we need to generate and develop is to forgive ourselves for the things we've done which have harmed other people. So forgiveness has these three aspects. It's not just about forgiving others, but it's also forgiving ourselves. Someone was saying to me once that they'd heard Achan Brahm's story about the brick wall that he made. And most of you who come regularly would have heard that story. In this brick wall, there were two bricks that were out of place. And Achan Brahm's perception meant that he only saw those two bad bricks. He didn't see the rest of the wall, which was done very well. And this person said to me, "Well, my life is like this. I've got two good bricks and the rest of the wall is bad. How can I live at peace with that kind of life?" Now, we mightn't think that our situation is as drastic as that, but we've all got some bad bricks in our wall. And for this person, through his practice, he had come to realise that it was no longer possible to turn a blind eye to those bricks, even if there was a lot that needed to be worked with, that he had to work with them. Because the next incentive for addressing these old wounds and hurts is, if we want to make progress in our meditation practice, we can't ignore these old experiences. When we meditate, these things are going to come up into our consciousness. This is one of the natural processes that happens through meditation. We start to clean out the mind. And so we can't ignore the debris that we've got there. We have to address it if we want to go further in our practice. And not only that, if we are intent on really developing the mind in meditation, we have to understand that it's only the happy mind that can meditate well, that can go to deep states of peacefulness. So unless we're prepared to do the work of directly addressing our old hurts, cleaning up the debris in the mind, then we're not going to be able to get to the happiness, the happy state of mind, which is necessary to go further in the meditation practice. Because every time we sit, we're going to be able to superficially be calm, and then we're going to get to a point where the mind reveals old hurts, old sadness, disappointments, and we're not going to be able to go to any deeper level of concentration until we deal with those things. So even to live happily, we need to do this work, but also for our development in meditation, it's also an essential thing to be prepared and willing to undertake. Sometimes we don't know that we need to work with forgiveness until we start to meditate. And as we get a clearer picture of our own mind and what it contains and our own life and our own life story, we don't realise we've got things that need to be addressed. It can be a revelation, and it can be really interesting to discover what we didn't know was there. One of the things that we very often discover is just how this past experience has been colouring our reactions in the present without our even being aware of it until we started to meditate. Someone was telling me how in their situation, in their life, they'd been divorced for many years. And when they got together with their in-laws, the conversation always eventually got around to, it's a pity that the marriage broke up. What really went wrong? How could you have worked it out so that you could have stayed married? And this person, every time the conversation got to that kind of discussion, she got angry and angry and angrier, and found it very difficult to be pleasant to the in-laws. Would always come up, and she was wondering, why is it that this kind of thing really rubs me the wrong way? And she was blaming them. And she was thinking, now I've got to forgive them for being so insensitive and forgive them for the way that they treated me when the marriage was breaking up. And she was thinking that she had done that work. She was quite peaceful, she thought, and yet always it would get to the point where she was really irritated. And then as she continued to practice and to look at her reactions and to discuss it, she discovered that the person that she hadn't forgiven for the breakup of the marriage was herself. She was still carrying a feeling of failure. Maybe if she'd only been wiser, or if she'd only been this or that, the marriage wouldn't have broken up. And it was a revelation to her that the person that needed forgiveness was she herself. And once she did that work, it changed the dynamics of the situation. Once she accepted her part in the breakup and what she'd made of her life since then the irritation that she had with her in-laws started slowly to dissipate. So this is one of the things we often uncover as we start to practice, things we didn't really know that we had to deal with, or aspects of what we have to deal with that we would never have been able to notice if we hadn't started to calm the mind, make it more peaceful, and also to develop more clarity within the mind. So once we discover that we need to develop this forgiveness for our own well-being, how do we go about it? Well, the starting point is honesty. Honesty with ourselves. Doesn't have to be to anyone else, but when we're making an inventory of what we've got in our mind, what we've got in our life experience, we need to be willing to look at it truthfully, face it. We don't have to try to justify it. We don't have to try to diminish it, make it seem more palatable. We have to deal with it honestly. But in order to do that, we have to have loving kindness for ourselves. Because this isn't about blaming. This isn't about proving how bad we were or how terrible. It's about seeing things more realistically. So we need to actively develop loving kindness towards ourselves and also compassion, which sees the suffering that we're experiencing in the present moment when memories, hurts, come up in the mind. That present moment recognition of the suffering and the wish to be free of suffering is the necessary support to be able and willing to do the necessary work. We recognize that what unites us all is our suffering, the fact that even though we want to be happy, we cause ourselves and others suffering through not knowing where our true happiness lies, not knowing how to deal skillfully with situations in our life. And one of the things that we can develop through being willing to turn towards some of these painful things is to see the causes and conditions that brought our suffering situations into being without automatically blaming. Very often when we look back on hurts, on things that have been done to us or things that we've done, we look back on them as something very fixed and solidified, very much something which is not fluid. We can't see any of the causes, the factors, the influences that were operating on it. When we aren't willing to really look deeply, particularly things that have happened to us in childhood. When we were a child, we very often have only part of the information about any situation, even when we're right in the middle of it. And that situation can become very much solidified in the mind, an episode, an event that had a beginning and an end. But we don't know the whole story. We didn't know the whole story even then. And so if we don't take it out and look at it again with loving kindness and compassion and with the detachment that develops through the meditation practice, the ability to stand back and observe, then we never get to see that old situation except through the eyes of a child. Once we have some life experience, once we've been on the other end of things, then what we know about life and what we know about human beings and relationships is quite different from what we understood when we were a child. This isn't to say that the pain that the child felt wasn't real and that we shouldn't honour that pain, recognise that pain. But we're putting that pain in quite a different context when we're able to reflect with wisdom and with equanimity on the situation that we were involved in. And then we can start to see how hard it is for us as human beings to do things perfectly, to get it right, even when we want to. One of the experiences we all have once we start to practice the Dharma is that we know it's good for us, and we believe it, and we know we should meditate, but we don't, because it's hard. Even when we know what to do, even when we've got good conditions, it's hard. It's hard to develop the mind. It's hard to let go of old habits. It's hard to give the time, put in the effort that's necessary. So once we see how difficult it is to change the mind, even when we know what we're doing, we can start to have a little bit more compassion for people, us or others, in situations in the past where even if we knew what we should be doing, we didn't. Even when we knew what would be easier or kinder to do, we didn't, or they didn't. So we're generally working on softening the heart towards ourselves and towards others. Remembering that the forgiveness is coming from our side. It's the work we do on our own heart, independent of what the other person, the one we've hurt, the one who's hurt us, independent of what they've done since that time. When we want to work on forgiveness and we start to look honestly, we will feel in the present moment pain, sadness, hurt, in the present moment. And that's what we're usually trying to avoid throughout our life, is anything that hurts, anything that's painful. And in this practice, once we start to work on these old wounds, we need to be willing to feel the pain that goes along with them. This is like the pain that patients feel in rehabilitation when they're trying to get their injured limb to move again, or trying to walk after an operation. There's pain. Can't do it without feeling the pain. And in the kind of work we're doing with the mind, we have to be willing to feel the pain. Not with blame, not with recrimination, with loving kindness, compassion, and acceptance. And just to sit with the sadness. Not the storyline, not going over the old dialogues, but feeling it in the body. Feeling it in the mind, the sadness, the hurt, the anger, the frustration, sometimes the helplessness. And as much as we're able to open to it, that much we let go of. And we work within our limitations. If we're dealing with very painful things, we may not be able to open to them for very long. Maybe too distressing. And that's why we need to make sure that we first of all prepare the mind by deliberately cultivating loving kindness and compassion towards ourselves. And only once we've done that do we do this work directly. That's the first part of working on forgiveness, particularly when it's forgiveness that we're asking from someone that we've hurt. The next stage in this process is to express our regret, to say we're sorry. Verbalizing what we feel is a way of owning it, not keeping it hidden so no one else knows. But we may not be able to share what we're feeling with anyone else, so we might write it down. But if we have a trusted friend or someone whom we respect, then once we've started to see what we've been hanging on to and we genuinely feel sorry for it, then it can be very helpful to go and tell another person, someone who can receive what we've got to say without judgment, with compassion and kindness, putting it out there so that we really own what it is that we're experiencing. If we're in the situation where we are able to, we might be able to go and say we're sorry to the person whom we've hurt. But if that's not possible, we might write a letter, which we can't even post anymore. Maybe that person has died. But we write it from our heart, saying what we would have said if we'd had the opportunity. There are many different ways of putting out, owning, and expressing the regret that we feel. Sometimes we might just go off quietly on our own and say the words to no one, just to say them and ask for forgiveness from that person. Sometimes the person might be around, but it's not appropriate to go and tell them or say anything to them because it may be too painful for them. And this is where we have to be very sensitive and realize that the work we're doing is for our own well-being. And that doesn't mean that we have to put it out onto someone who can't accept it. So it's not even that we're trying to, in the first instance, build a bridge with that person. In the first instance, we're doing the work with ourselves. So after acknowledging it, expressing our regret, and asking for forgiveness, if we can, sometimes when people have something that's really painful and they share it with one of the Sangha members, sometimes we'll do a little ceremony of forgiveness where the person offers incense and flowers, lights candles for the shrine, and then asks forgiveness from that person that they've hurt, or offers forgiveness to someone who's hurt them, without that person even knowing that that's what's going on. Just to do something formally, something to do, that kind of action, can actually help to bring this wound into the open. So that's one of the things that is very helpful, but you may not feel comfortable with that. And you don't have to do that in order to work through forgiveness. The next thing that is a skillful thing to do is, having seen the consequences of one's own action or what has happened in the past, one makes the determination never to repeat that kind of unskillful action again. And this is very important because it helps us to recognize how we've changed, how we've moved on, that we're not the person who did that. Very often we can say, well, if I'd known what I know now, I never would have done that. Or the kind of person that I've become would never do that kind of thing now. And it's important for us to recognize that and acknowledge it to ourselves so that we don't hold on to the image of ourselves as always being the person who did that or the person who had that particular thing done to them. And especially this is important when we realize that when people hurt others, they've often been hurt themselves. This isn't much consolation if you're the one who's being pounded, But studies of people who commit violent crimes or who commit sexual offences, those studies reveal that a very high percentage of those people have received that kind of abuse themselves, particularly as children. And they're acting out the kind of hurt that they've experienced themselves. So when we work on forgiving ourselves or forgiving others, we need to be able to see ourselves as having moved on from the person who did or received that kind of treatment. And then the next step is to make amends. To make amends is not to clear the slate, because in terms of our karma, whatever we've done, we're going to be the heir of, but it's to redress the balance. The simile that is very helpful for understanding how this aspect of forgiveness works is the story about the teaspoon of salt. The teaspoon of salt, if it's put into the river Ganges, doesn't affect the taste of the Ganges at all. But if you put a teaspoon of salt in a cup of water, then that cup of water is going to be completely salty and undrinkable. So when we are thinking about making amends, what we are doing is creating good karma to offset the strength of the effect of the unwholesome karma that we've done. So instead of living our lives as that cup of water, so that whatever we do really has a great bearing on the quality of that cup of water, we make our lives like the river Ganges, so full of goodness that whatever unskillful things we've done don't have the same strength, the same potency to act on our life. So when we make amends, we do what we can, similar to whatever it is that we've done that's been harmful. So for example, for women who've had abortions, and they feel a great sense of sorrow at having done that, then to do something to support life, to do something to help children. This is a way of making amends. Can't make amends to the fetus that was aborted, but you can make amends by doing something positive for children who are alive. And this is the way we work. And it may be that we do something once, or it may be that we do something over a long period of time, because we really want to move in the opposite direction from what we've done in the past, which we now know has been hurtful or harmful. Now, when we do this work, and it's not easy, we also have to understand that it's not going to remove the hurt straight away. Two things are working here. One is the fact that if we've done something that's unskillful, the karma vipaka, the fruit of that action, is that when it comes into our consciousness again, it is accompanied by unpleasant feeling. That is the fruit of that unwholesome action. And particularly if we've done something very drastic, or if we've done it repeatedly over many years, then there's going to be a lot of that unpleasant feeling to bear with, to deal with, has to be dealt with each time it arises. So just imagine that it's like a stockpile. And we do the work and we take off a little bit of the stockpile, but we don't get rid of it all just by doing a little bit of work or just doing it once. We have to do it repeatedly over a period of time and just keep at it until we little by little reduce that stockpile. As we reduce the stockpile, we reduce the intensity of the feelings that come up when we remember that experience or when we're in a similar situation again. Previously, we might have been in a similar situation like the lady who was divorced. Every time she was with her in-laws, the feelings would come up very powerfully so that she was overwhelmed by them. But once she started to realize what was going on and started to work on forgiving herself, the feelings would come up, but they no longer were out of control. They became more manageable, more bearable, until eventually they subsided, not completely, but to the point where they were no longer such a difficult thing to bear. The other thing to remember is that though we forgive, we don't necessarily forget, or we don't forget so easily. It takes time. Even if we've forgiven that person or forgiven ourselves, the memory will be there. And if we get into similar situations again, we will very often find that that memory is triggered, and with that, the unpleasant feelings that go with it. So we have to be very patient and we have to be compassionate to ourselves, determined and willing to work with it over and over and over again. And even doing that, we may not come to the end of the suffering connected with what we've done, even in this life, but we understand where it's coming from and we become more skillful at dealing with it. I'd like to tell you a true story about someone who was a very powerful practitioner, very powerful Buddhist practitioner. And this person was a young woman during the Second World War, and she lived in Holland. And she was a member of the underground resistance. And what she did was she helped Jews and she helped Allied airmen who'd been shot down to escape from occupied Europe. And she was a member of a very close-knit cell who carried out these operations. And at one time, as part of the work she was doing to help with the gathering of information, she got into a relationship with a German soldier, a member of the SS. And it just so happened that one night he came to her house to call on her, and he saw some people hiding in her house. And he said, because he cared for this person, "I won't tell. I'll keep it a secret, I promise." But because of the nature of the work and because of her loyalty to the people that she worked with, the other members of the cell, and also the people she was trying to save, she determined that there was no course of action available to her but to kill this person. She'd lived with a gun for many years and was quite used to this kind of encounter with others, but this was a situation much closer to home. And as the story goes, and this is a true story, she went on an assignation with this German soldier, and She shot him. She killed him in order to protect the other people that she worked with. Now, this was obviously a cause of great suffering for her, and she couldn't make amends to the person that she'd killed. But from that time on, throughout the course of her life, she sent money to his parents in Germany, anonymous money, because she knew that if he had lived, he would have been looking after his parents. There was nothing else she could do to make amends for the deed that she'd done. And throughout her career in the underground, a couple of times she was captured and tortured very badly. And after the war, which she survived as the only member of her group that survived, after the war she became interested in Buddhism, and she started to practice meditation, and she became a very powerful practitioner. But throughout the whole of her life, she had terrible nightmares. She would wake up screaming, cowering in a corner, remembering not only what had been done to her, but what she had done. Now, if we think about this story, we can see that this person's actions, what would we do in that situation? We're very fortunate that we haven't been in that situation. In that situation, she did the best she could, and afterwards, when she started to practice as a Buddhist, she started to make sense of that in terms of the Dharma. She understood that in making amends by supporting or sending money to this man's parents, she was doing what was available to her. And she also worked very hard to come to terms with the pains in her life, the pain in her mind. And yet she suffered throughout her life until she died, even though she was a very accomplished practitioner. Certainly the suffering diminished, but it didn't go away completely. Now, this is a very extreme story, but it's a true story. And it's important because sometimes we hope that we'll be able to make things okay. Only if we become fully enlightened will we be able to make things completely okay. Up until that point, we are still subject to suffering. So, in one sense, we have to not be discouraged and think, I'm hopeless because I still haven't found complete peace. We have to realize the limitations. But on the other hand, we also have to be inspired to really keep going, because halfway is not good enough. And being satisfied with just being able to get through the day without too much stress is not good enough. What we have is the opportunity to practice for the complete ending of suffering, and that's what we should all aspire to. But on the way to that goal, we need to be willing to forgive ourselves and forgive others, not for them, but for our own sake. Once we do it for ourselves, then the positive benefits will automatically flow on to others. And this is the beauty of the teaching. benefits are there for all of us. And if each one of us can just do our own work, the world will certainly be a much better place. So I offer this teaching for you this evening and hope that it's of benefit for you, and may it help us all to attain Nibbana. Does anyone have any questions or comments about the talk? So the question is, how does one help someone who's so full of self-loathing that the thought of forgiveness is just more than they can entertain? And for that kind of person, what one needs to do is to do something that is can be remembered with loving kindness. So if someone has nothing in themselves and nothing in their life that they can use for generating that feeling of loving kindness, as someone trying to help them, as their friend, you need to organise some ways in which that person can do service, be of service, do things that are useful so that they're actively going out and helping in whatever way. It can be very simple kinds of ways. Doesn't have to be on a grand scale. And you can draw their attention to that thing, and that thing becomes the trigger for the arising of at least a sense of goodwill towards themselves, even if it's not full-blown loving kindness. So sometimes you can't make something out of nothing. This person has to have something in their experience that they can refer to. In order to do this work, we're actually working on changing our perception, which is the point of Achan Brahm's story about the two bricks or in the wall. You can either see the two bricks or you can see the whole wall. But if you haven't got anything, no wall at all, then you have to do something active to cultivate it. So for someone in that situation, you might just bring their attention to the fact that they smiled at someone, or they smiled at you, or that they did something in a very small sort of thing. But if they haven't got anything, then if you're helping them, you have to find things that they can do and help them to do them so that they can generate some sense of kindness towards themselves. Right. The question is about one way of giving up hurts is because you know that karma will take care of the person, and that is true. But there's a little bit of misunderstanding there if you think that if you forgive them, that you take away their bad karma. And that's a wrong understanding. Their bad karma is their bad karma. You can't take it away from them, just like someone else can't take it away from you. Even if you forgive them, it's forgiveness is coming from your side. It doesn't have anything to do with them. They may never know what you've accomplished by being able to forgive them. That's happening in your own heart, and it doesn't affect their bad karma. But one of the things that we're trying to develop is when we realise the consequences of our actions, we have compassion. The people who've hurt us are going to get the consequences of their actions. And if we realise how foolish we can be, then we see that we're just like they are. We've got the potential to do harmful things too. So this compassion is not just for ourselves but for all who are foolish and hurtful. They don't realise what they're doing to themselves, what they're storing up for their future experience. So it may seem pie in the sky that you can have so much compassion that you forgive your tormentors, but this is actually what happens. If you read about the life stories or experiences of some of the Tibetan monks and nuns who've been held in prison for 20 or 30 years and have been brutally tortured by their Chinese guards during that time. And yet they come out of those prisons full of compassion and loving kindness for the people who've caused them often to be disfigured and maimed for life. So it is possible. It's a very, very deep practice, but it is possible. And that's what we should be aiming for. But we start off with working on our own heart, first of all, particularly in relation to ourselves and particularly in relation to those people who are closest to us, who've had the most impact on us. The question is about that it's very difficult to forgive often, and the example is the parent of a child who's died because of a drunken driver. How can one forgive that drunken driver? And as I said, we start off by recognising the harm we're doing to ourselves by hanging on to hurts. And so obviously the parent is going to grieve and be sad, but if they're full of hate and anger towards that drunken driver, they're the ones who are hurting themselves. They're the ones who are suffering. A sort of flippant line that I read about forgiveness is that said, don't bear a grudge. While you're bearing a grudge, the other guy's out dancing. And this is, it seems flippant, but this is actually pointing to one of the things the Buddha said. When someone hurts you, they hurt you once. But when you keep thinking about it and rolling in it and remembering it and having hatred towards that other person, you're hurting yourself many, 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 many times. And the other person who's hurt you may have just forgotten it and gone off. They're not suffering. So the question we always should ask is, who's suffering in this situation? And if we see I'm suffering, what can I do to get out of suffering? So it's not that we make light of the distress that a parent feels and the anger that would come up and all of the other emotions. But eventually, there has to come a point where, as individuals, we see, where does my happiness lie? Does it lie in continuing to hurt, to hate that other person? Or is there a way of living so that I'm living without inflicting pain on myself constantly? So that's the starting point. The starting point is always to come back to our own experience. And from then it's a gradual process. The loss of a child, of course, is drastic. But what we're trying to see in, as we cultivate an understanding of the teaching, is that death happens, and it's likely to happen at any time to anyone. And if we have an understanding that life is uncertain, the way that our death happens is uncertain. It can be tragic, but that's what happens once we're born. So trying to get our own personal situation in a wider context, the context of the teaching, that can also be helpful. But that sort of reflection is very difficult to develop once you're in the middle of hurt. That's why it's important that we practice while we have the opportunity, when things are going pretty well, so that we start to build up some stamina in the mind to be able to deal with these terrible hurts that we experience in life. And then for the parent who's trying to deal with the loss of their child and dealing with their anger towards the person who's caused that, they have to work steadily to try to forgive for their own sake. And just one thing is not going to do it. One thing is... The result that they want, which is to be able to forgive, is the result of many different causes and conditions. So any kind of development of the mind in meditation, strengthening the mind, it may not work directly on that anger, but little by little it will produce the conditions for being able to work on that anger. So you have to put the anger sort of further down the track, if you like. Not that you're going to address it directly to start with, but you have to build up the other conditions in the mind, in the conditions in your life, to make it possible to eventually deal directly with that anger. No easy solution, I'm afraid. So the comment is that it's easier to forgive if we can accept that somehow we've created or contributed to what happened, that by being there, which was our choice, we're part of the problem, in a sense. So Gene's personal experience was getting knocked off his bike and damaged in an accident. So he's saying, if I wasn't there, the accident couldn't have happened. And yes, when we start to see the bigger picture, we realise that things don't happen by accident, by and large. And that doesn't take away the hurt, but it can help us to accept this is what I'm dealing with and stop wasting energy by resisting the situation that's right in front of us. So much of what we're doing in trying to avoid suffering is trying to get rid of the situation instead of dealing with the situation. This avoidance of the situation instead of confronting it. And that's what Buddhist practice is about, is confronting, but in a very skillful and non-aggressive way. So if whatever situation we've got, that's what we've got to learn to deal with. Whether we've asked for it, whether we want it, this is what we have to deal with. This is our working ground. This is our practice. Very often we think, if this didn't happen to me, then I'd be able to really practice well. Or if I just get through this terrible situation, then I'll be able to practice well. But the terrible situation is the practice. It's the food for the practice. It's the grist for the mill. That's why the teaching is addressing life. It's not that it addresses only the good bits and we have to wait till we get back through the bad bits and then we can really apply the teaching. The teaching is about life. Whatever's in front of us, that's what we've got to deal with. If there are no more questions, then I think it's time for announcements. And if anyone likes to come and speak to me afterwards, they're welcome to do that.